Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. It's time for the match preview. Newcastle will take on Bournemouth this Saturday up at St James's Park. The Premier League restarts following the postponement of games after the death of Queen Elizabeth II. I'm Andrew Musgrove, joined as usual for the match preview by John Gibson. And John, very happy that football is back.
Oh, very much so. And I think it can be linked in very much to paying tributes to the Queen. This week already we've had Great North Run took place. Newcastle Falcons played up here at the rugby. The St. Ledger, the Queen's great love of racing, the St. Ledger was run in her honour. And we've had the Champions League back, the full English Football League back midweek, and we eventually get back this weekend to the Premier League. And I like the idea that we can pay homage to what the Queen meant for so long, 70 years, and also welcome King Charles by the wonder of sport. There's nothing greater than a sports occasion for bringing together people. There's no greater arena to do that in than St. James's Park. Atmospheric, since War Flags come along, a new ownership, a new manager, a new optimism. And I think St. James's Park will do the Queen, and to a certain extent, King Charles, because he's been welcome too, will do them proud on Saturday, because it is the best, most emotive, emotional stadium on planet football at the moment. And that really, I say that not as a biased Geordie, but because I think it's a fact. And I think that emotion can be conveyed to the rest of the country about what people think and thought about the Queen. So I think bringing it back is absolutely right. Let people rejoice in her reign and hopefully launch King Charles into a fascinating reign. It's not going to be as long, but let's hope it's long enough. And I think it's perfect to come back, and I think it ought to come back, and I think it allows sport and all the people that love sport to come together in celebration of a life. It is right to bring it back, even though we have the state funeral a couple of days later, of course.
Yeah, I'm just clarifying, when I said I'm very happy the football's back, obviously it's not the most important thing, but I'm happy that football fans are going to get the chance to show their respect to Queen Elizabeth. It should have been on last week, and we're going over old ground here, because I'm sure, John, you voiced your opinions. Guys listening to this will know the opinions of myself. It should have been on last week. Football fans would have paid their respects in the right way. We saw with the Great North Run how it could be done with 60,000. Exactly, the cricket. So
rugby at the Falcons.
As we say, old ground. The game is going ahead, thankfully, and you know it will be a very emotional moment. And I'm sure Newcastle United fans will do the city and the region very, very proud and paying their respects to the Queen. On to the football.
Yeah,
John. Obviously, this game comes with a bit of a backstory. Bournemouth, yeah. It is Eddie Howe's old club, yeah, where he built his reputation, where it went very, very sour. Obviously, Bournemouth were relegated under his tenure, but what he had done previously meant he had enough credit in the bank to still be named, still be listed as one of these great English managers. Did well enough to pass the initial interview stage at Newcastle, get down to the final two, you know, finally get the job. It's going to be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, I mean, without a shadow of doubt, Eddie Howe is the greatest manager Bournemouth have ever had. And I know that they've had Harry Redknapp and people like that, but talking about the longevity of the fella, they've taken him from the bottom division in the Football League into the Premier League, being a player. Everything about him, he was the sort of Joe Harvey of Bournemouth, if you like, that played and managed successfully, and was terrific for the club. Yes, they had Harry Redknapp, who hit the stars, etc., etc., and charismatic guy. But I mean, this is an interesting match because it's the first time Eddie Howe's faced Bournemouth since he left them. And of course, as you say, they were relegated in his last season, but that is often, if you stay around long enough, that's what happens. But you're still a legend at that club. I mean, a lot of people don't realise in the mists of time that Brian Clough was relegated in his last season at Nottingham Forest. But he's still the biggest legend they've ever had or ever likely to have, winning the European Cup twice, etc., etc. So he's a legend there, and there's no doubt that Eddie Howe was a legend at Bournemouth. It's a bit unfortunate from Callum Wilson's point of view that he's not part of it, because it's the great Bournemouth reunion, isn't it? We've got a quarter of Bournemouth up here because we've got Eddie Howe, we've got, without Tyndall in the back room staff, and we've got Callum Wilson, and no doubt involved in some way, even if it's only off the bench or on the bench, you'll have Ryan Fraser and Matt Ritchie as well. So it's quite an emotional. However, having said that, we want to take emotion totally out of it, give Bournemouth a good tonking, send them back to the South Coast and say thank you very much.
Yeah, Newcastle need a win. It is as simple as that. They have 7 points on the board, which is actually the same amount as Bournemouth, but Newcastle haven't picked up a win since that opening day of the season.
I mean, however we dress it up, and the performances have not been bad, they're just the results have not measured up to the performances. But however we want to dress it up, and we are very optimistic by nature up here, but we have every reason to be optimistic right now, because the club is without question heading in the right direction. But facts are still facts, and we've only won 1 out of 6, and that's got to change. And isn't it staggering that a club like Bournemouth, who lost by 3 goals to Arsenal, 4 goals to Manchester City and 9 goals to Liverpool, have won twice as many Premier League matches as Newcastle? They've won 2 and we've won 1. Now, in Bournemouth, were everyone's favourites for relegation before the season started, because they hadn't got going in the transfer market. Some side that comes up goes straight back down, and Bournemouth were the favourites. But, you know, they get beat 9 at Liverpool. The sack, an ex-Geordie player, playing for Geordie Land, not a Geordie, Scott Parker, in the take-off. They get a 0-0 at Wolves and a 3-2 against Forest. So, interesting, but this is a match, as you said, no ifs, no buts, no maybes. Newcastle need to win.
Yeah, Bournemouth conceded 18 goals so far.
Well, when you concede 9 in a game, you have conceded a lot in total.
I mean, if you're Alexander Isak, you'll be licking your lips at this prospect. I'm sure Eddie Howe, you know, showing them all DVDs and videos of how Bournemouth can be got at. And I'm sure if you're a striker like Isak with the quality, you should have scored against Crystal Palace. So you'll be looking to right that wrong. No, you will be looking forward to this game.
Yeah, and looking forward to doing it in front of his home fans, in front of 50,000 Geordies, because he had 2 contrasting games, didn't he? His game was sensational at Liverpool when he scored 1 and really scored 2, but was fractionally offside, but for 2 super, super finishes. Came to St James's Park, had too long to think about it on the run and on goal, tried to dink the goalkeeper, didn't get it high enough over him, blocked off. Slightly disappointing home debut, only because the bar was so high from Liverpool.
He was quiet, but I don't think he had necessarily had a bad game. He still made some really exciting runs. He still looked like he could handle himself physically. And yes, he should have scored, and he didn't have too many chances. But I didn't go home thinking, goodness me, what have we signed here? I went home thinking, he should have scored, it'll happen.
Of course,
it'll
he wouldn't
happen.
Go home saying, goodness me, because he can remember Liverpool when he proved what a good player he was. The point I'm trying to make is that at home, he'll want to perform the way he did at Liverpool. I'm not saying he was poor, as you said, against Palace. He wasn't. But he would be disappointed that he didn't get that goal, which would have won the game for us. We needn't have been all upset about VAR. But he'll want to put in a performance. And as you say, if you look at their goals against record, even when they won the last game at Forest, they let in 2, managed to score 3. They concede goals by the bucketful, and this is a match for Isaac to go out and score.
Now, for what Newcastle want to achieve this season, and everyone listening to this podcast knows that I've set my bar pretty low, 11th place finish in a cup run, but the consensus is people want like a top seven, top eight, so we'll put that on the table. For what they want to achieve this season, this has to be a game that they're aiming to win.
Well, there's no question about that at all, but I mean, I did say that, if you remember, going back a fortnight, and it seems an awful long time ago, I said, if you're going to play Crystal Palace at home, and you're going to finish in the top half, you beat Crystal Palace. Well, of course, they did, but VAR decided they didn't, so they didn't. But you get the point I'm making. You're going to get the silly result. You know, I mean, for goodness sake, we drew it home to Man City. We weren't expecting that. We drew it home to Palace. We weren't expecting that. But we thought we'd lose to City and beat Palace. You're going to get results like Palace, but the secret is you can't have two on the bounce at home. You can't not beat Palace and then not beat Bournemouth. You've got to beat Bournemouth. There's absolutely no question. And incidentally, I think they will.
I asked Aaron this the other day on our Monday episode about Newcastle and the risk of becoming draw specialists. If they draw against Bournemouth, John, is there a point, and where is that point where we start turning around and saying, okay, draws aren't good enough. We need to start picking up wins. And do you think that's coming around the corner soon?
I think it's here now. Draw's not good enough on Sunday. A draw's not good enough. We've drawn too many. A draw's not good enough against Bournemouth. They've got to beat Bournemouth. And we're good enough to beat Bournemouth. And we will beat Bournemouth.
That's what we like.
We've actually got to go out and do it.
Let's look at the starting 11 then, as we always do. No question, Nick Pope will start. Now, I just want to get
especially now, by the way, with Darlow injured, he's got to start, doesn't he?
Well, I just want to get your thoughts on the signing of Luis Karius, of course, former Liverpool man. Had that stinker in the Champions League final. Came out, of course, that he was concussed, so, you know, wasn't entirely his fault. Does one bad game plus that injury define a career, do you think?
Unfortunately, it does in some people's minds, and it oughtn't to. But you have a cross to bear. You can play. I was talking to Monty, who's a mate of mine, a scout, Paul Montgomery, who scouted with Bobby Robson just yesterday. We're having lunch. And Oberfirman Martins, our old player, is a hero in Birmingham because he scored the winning goal in the League Cup final when they'd never won a trophy for Yonks. He had to push it into an empty net from about 2 inches. But he is a hero. And he's not a hero anywhere else because he was a very average player. So incidents do define careers. And this guy, bless him, has had to carry that stick and beat himself over the head with it ever since that final. And goalkeepers, it happens that way. They either drop an absolute clanger, or because they get a lot of practice, they produce some worldly saves, and forever they're the guy that defied whoever and whoever. It happens. But, and of course, since that finished him at Liverpool, he's gone out on loan a couple of abroad with Germany, etc. Didn't pull up any trees, but I mean, he was basically had a huge reputation before his unfortunate European Champions League final. But when you think we've got to sign a goalkeeper after the transfer deadline, so he's got to be a free agent. I mean, sod's law that what happened to Darlow after letting Dubravka go is so unfortunate. And you know, what could we have done better? We tried to get Ben Foster, but I mean, we couldn't get him out the queue to get his pension down at the post office, so we didn't get him. But so, you know, we've acted quickly. We've got somebody. We couldn't just go along with Gillespie, so we've got to be satisfied with that. We may never see this guy, you know.
Well, touch wood.
In touch wood, we don't, and that's with utmost respect to the guy himself, because to see him, Pope would have to be injured, and whether Dubravka is here or Darlow is fit, we wouldn't want Pope injured.
Well, I was going to ask you about an injury to a goalkeeper, and thankfully it isn't Nick Pope. It is Jordan Pickford. Now, we have the international break coming up. We have the World Cup in just over 2 months' time. I mean, this is a big few weeks for Nick Pope, isn't it? Because assuming he gets called up to the England squad, he's going to probably start, you would assume, with the injury to Jordan Pickford. He is in brilliant form at Newcastle United at the moment. We're talking about Newcastle being on 7 points. Well, a large part of that is down to some of the class saves Nick Pope made, especially against Brighton, against Manchester City. So we're hoping for another... Well, it's strange, because are you hoping for another brilliant performance against against Bournemouth, or are you hoping he's not troubled?
He should not have too much to do, and that would do us fine, and I think he would be happy with that.
If he's called upon, we're hoping he does what he's been doing so far this season, but a big few weeks for him, because he could really stake his claim for that number one.
Massive. It's him and Ramsdale now, the Arsenal keeper, isn't it? At the moment, Pickford will be back for the World Cup, but it's a chance to put a lot of pressure on Pickford. He's a super goalkeeper. If anybody, you know, there was a few people raised the odd eyebrow when we signed him and said, well, Dubravka's never let us down. He's a top-class goalkeeper. Why do we need another goalkeeper?
I'll admit, I wasn't quite in that square, circle, whatever you want to call it, but I was very nearly.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people think like that. And then you see Nick Pope's performances this season.
Streets ahead.
Oh, dear me, Lenton, Northumberland Street. Without a shadow of doubt. And it also shows people can be improved. I've said before, but you know, we get burned. Left-sided central defender, magnificent in January, magnificent from then to end of the season. We stay up comfortably, etc., etc. And we'll go and get Botman, who's a replica, even in height. And think, well, do we need him when we've got Byrne? Well, the answer to everybody that's in that Newcastle team is, don't think you're shoo-in, my friend. Everybody has got somebody that's better than him until you get up to Messi of a few years back and Ronaldo of a few years back, neither of them now. There's always somebody better and they can always be improved, and Pope has proved that. And then, but when you look at his Burnley record, I mean, Burnley went down having conceded about, roughly off the top of my head, about half the goals Newcastle conceded, which was down to him. So they were always in with a chance because he was performing so magnificently.
What does he do in this game and in the weeks after the international break to convince Gareth Southgate that he is England's number one?
It's very difficult because...
I suppose he's doing everything he can do, isn't he, really?
Yes, there's no more he can personally do. Southgate is a bit like Eddie Howe in as much as he's very loyal to whoever's in charge, in the team. He sticks with that person. And in a way, he may stick with Pickford until he has two successive clangers. And if that's in the World Cup, it could be too late. But he is a loyal type manager. It is difficult. But I mean, the wonderful thing is that Pope knows he's going. And when he had to leave Burnley at the end of last season because they were going in the Championship, he knew he had to stay in the Premier League if he was going to go to the World Cup finals. He stayed in with Newcastle. He's been magnificent. Job achieved. Now he's got a push to try to get the starting.
Then looking at the defence, another England international, Kieran Trippier, we would expect him to be called up as well. Yep. I mean, there's not much more we can say about the absolute class of Kieran Trippier. I mean, the back line, you'd expect the back line to be unchanged against Bournemouth.
Yeah, you would go Shaw, Botman and Target.
Simple as that, really, isn't
without
it?
Without a shadow of doubt. The only things to be decided, I mean, the team picks itself, apart from, is Bruno and is Maxi fit enough to start? And if they are fit enough to start, they start. And, of course, not having last weekend off increases their chances because, you know, it's give them an extra week of training. That, for me, is the only two decisions anyhow's got to make is, can those two start?
If they're not fit and they're not back, do Newcastle have enough in those positions, so on the flank and in the centre, to get the better of Bournemouth, even if them two aren't playing?
Yes, to get the better of Bournemouth. They haven't got good enough in those positions to get the better of the top four teams, because Bruno and Maxi on his day are the cream on the top of the cake and are missed hugely. But against Bournemouth, I honestly believe they still have enough. Yes, they do. But let's make certain. I mean, I've been very anxious that these two come back as quickly as they can. Callum Wilson's another one, but we know he's not going to come back for Bournemouth. But they are three chop, chop, chop players by the standard Newcastle are currently at to be missing all in one fell swoop, Bruno, Wilson and Maxi. And we need two of those three back this weekend and the other one back as soon as possible, please. And that's got nothing to do with Isaac or any of the other positions.
Now, Eddie Howe will hold his press conference, we assume, on Friday, so are recording this a couple of days prior to that, we expect. Although knowing Eddie Howe, he's not always too open and clear about returning players.
No, but he won't be. He won't say categorically he is out. Bruno's in, but Maxi's out, or the other way round, or they're both in, or they're both out. He'll vaguely say there's going to be a late fitness test with both of them, and then that... I mean, I know in the old days a lot of fans sort of say, oh, well, you could give us more guidance than that. We ought to know what's happening. But he doesn't want to tell Bournemouth what's happening.
It's all part of the master plan, isn't it?
It's all part of the way they play, and it's an accepted way of football these days.
If Bruno comes back, and I do think, you know, we've got a better chance seeing Bruno in black and white on Saturday than we do perhaps St Maximin. But let's say Bruno is back in that side. Who does he come in for? Who drops out?
Good question, because you go Bruno, Joe Linton, and then you've got Longstaff and Willock for one position. Or, if Anderson for me would be.
I think there's a lot of calls for Elliot Anderson to start this game.
Nobody's called more than me for it on the podcasts, in print, online. I've beat the gong so much you'd think I was getting paid by...
Is that a cap you're wearing saying play Elliot Anderson this Saturday, John?
That's exactly what it says, isn't it? I think it would do the lad the world of good. I think, funnily enough, Andrew, this is the sort of game that's perfect for him to play in. You know, you don't necessarily want Manchester City or even stuttering Liverpool away. Yes, you do, because if he's good enough, he's good enough. But against Bournemouth, where we might be driving forward, where he might have time to show his offensive skills, because that's what makes him a class apart, offence, not defence, it's a very, very good game for him. And I would like, whether he played as the third midfielder alongside Bruno and Joe Linton, or whether he played as the wide man in place of St Maximin, or... in place of Miggy, if some Maximum started, is a matter of choice of Eddie.
That's the thing, isn't it? He's got a bit of versatility about him.
No question.
He can play out on that wide. He can play in the centre. He could play as a number 10. What do you think is holding Eddie Howe back from starting him? Because a lot of fans would have had him in much earlier. And of course, we in Eddie, we trust. He works with him day in, day out on the training field. He sees a lot more than any of us will ever see in terms of player development and what have you. But what do you think might just be holding him back?
I don't think anything's holding him back apart from a feeling in your own mind, not his mind, the manager's mind. Am I going to be asking too much of this boy too early? I mean, this is a guy who spent last season in League Two. And to all intents and purposes, I'm pretty certain in the mind of Eddie Howe, at the beginning of this summer, was going to go out on loan again. And then he saw the build of him, he saw him in training every day, he saw he'd filled out, he saw the confidence of him, he saw him pre-season, he saw him when he took him abroad and said, hey, I think this kid's ready. Let's keep him on the bench and slip him in. When he slipped him in, the performance of Newcastle has gone up a notch. So you can't, it is only a matter of time before Anderson gets a start, whether it's Bournemouth, whether it's after the international break, before the World Cup, or after that, and I think it will be not after that, it'll be before that. It's just the courage to put him in, the feeling that he's got the right players around him to give him a chance of shining, and a look at the opposition that you're playing against. And I think this match ticks all those boxes.
You think that's what it is with how we've seen it with some signings where he just takes his time slowly just to bed them in.
Yeah.
And I suppose it is a bit, obviously it is a big step. He's a young lad and chucking him in.
Of course it is, of course it is. But it was a big step to put Gaza in at one time when he was just a little fat lad eating Mars bars. But by Jove, that turned out to be a bit useful, wasn't it? If you looked at Chris Waddle when he first came to Newcastle, when he ran around on the pitch, he looked as if he had a sack of coal on his back. He was that stooped and bedeviled, and then you thought all of a sudden he's a swan from being an ugly duckling. And this happens.
If you're Jacob Murphy, if you're even Sean Longstaff, Miguel Almirón, and you will be playing day in, day out with this Elliot Arnesen and noticing what a player he is, and then you see him come on against Crystal Palace and really offer some threat, nearly set Newcastle up for the win. I'll also throw Joe Willock into that mix as well. How will you be feeling? Because you'll be knowing that you've got this kid, and it's not just a flash in the pan. You know,
absolutely.
He looks like he's got a career ahead of him, and that'll be rattling a few. I would think.
Well, I hope so, because competition's what it's all about. If you're Willock or Longstaff, you're hoping he gets in on the wing, and if you're Almirón or Murphy, you hope he gets in the centre of midfield, not your position. But I mean, in fairness, people like Murphy's got to look at themselves, not look at the opposition, look at themselves and admit to himself, I'm not doing enough to be part of this club after come January. Mm. And if you don't do something about it, you'll go out and loan on January or you'll be sold in January.
How important is it now Dan Ashworth's come in, and Dan Ashworth's got this big reputation about making sure there's a pathway from the youth system up to the first team. It's important, isn't it, that the senior first team players can actually see that this is a real thing, that if there was a kid good enough coming through them ranks, there is now a pathway and there's now a solid desire to get these kids bedded into the first team squad, and if they're good enough, to get into the first 11.
I think Dan Ashworth's done that or encouraged that at Brighton, and so did Eddie Howe at Bournemouth. Now, there will be people that will say, when you've got clubs of a limited stature, financially, crowd support, etc., as Brighton and Bournemouth, they have to rely to a certain extent on producing good kids that haven't cost a fortune in the transfer market. People like Newcastle in the past have been accused of ignoring kids and going out and buying big stars off the shelf. And I'm going way, way back from the 50s onwards. I'm not talking about the Ashley either. So, yes, but that's got to be established. And Newcastle United, a lot of the things they're doing that are positive are going down that road. They haven't got time to immediately get every great little Geordie lad. They've got to start doing that. But they're important kids in as well, aren't they? They're important. The bright Galway in Scotland, and they're important to increase that under 18 to under 21 sides, which have been poor. And these guys will be the stars of tomorrow, they hope, in the way that Anderson will be.
There's going to be lots to look forward to as a Newcastle United fan. But one of the things I'm most looking forward to is seeing the development of the academy, because for too long, it has been overlooked. Under Mike Ashley, you know, you can count the players who have come through and made a career out of it on one hand. And I'm so looking forward to seeing proper investment, a proper plan, the right, you know, staff in place. You've got Dan Ashworth there and Eddie Howe who also buy into it, and it's going to be so refreshing. And yes, you know, most of them probably won't make it in Newcastle United, but how many have come through that academy that have made it elsewhere? Very, very few. The top level.
Yeah.
So I think Dan Ashworth has mentioned previously that it's not all about them pulling on the black and white shirt, it's about developing them, and if they don't make the cut here, they make it elsewhere at the Premier League Championship. But I'm so excited just to see.
Because if you look back off the top of the head over the recent past, we're hoping Elliot Anderson's going to be the answer to that, but you're looking at sort of Dummett and Andy Carroll and
Longstaffs.
People that's come through, and the two Longstaffs. Sean, who's made the first team, Matty, no, but that's fine. But really, you're not looking at anybody else that's had a sustained impact off the top of your head. But you know, I wrote a book, Donkeys, years ago. I did a lot of things, Donkeys, years ago, because I've had plenty of years. And this was way, way back, called The Hotbed of Soccer, which was talking about how the North East is this was at the pomp when we had the Charlton brothers and the Milburn clan. and everybody. And we went through Ralph Coates, and they played for England and for Burnley, and right away through to Shearer in Carrick. This area has produced a host of wonderful, wonderful players, most of which haven't ended up at Newcastle. And when three did, three kids, Waddle, Beardley and Gascoigne, we flogged them and got relegated. Well done us. That pattern's got to change, and I think is, we're in the very, very, you know, we've planted the seeds and we haven't quite seen the shoots come through the soil yet, but it's going to be there. That is being addressed. You can't just address the first team. That's essential. That's a given. You know that. But, you know, you can't wear a fur coat and have rags on underneath. You've got to get the foundations right as well. And that's part of the rebuilding Newcastle are doing. It's twofold. It's getting a lot more Elliot Andersons and buying those necessary, like Bruno and Trippier and Pope and Isaac.
Getting back to Saturday then, let's say that everybody is fit. Who starts in that midfield? If everyone is fit, passed.
Yeah, well, obviously Bruno and Joe Linton straight away. I think I might go... Well, it depends where I'm going to put Anderson, because, yes, if because then your choice is either you go with Longstaff as the third midfielder and you go with Anderson instead of Miggy. Not necessarily that, or you can move some maximum across. I would tend to leave Miggy for his great North Run efforts and maybe play Anderson as a third midfielder.
Okay. And then St-Maximum back.
And St-Maximum back up front, because you said if everybody's fit.
Poor Ryan Fraser then, not... Ryan Fraser's behind the pecking order and Miggy's ahead of him?
Ryan Fraser does well, scurries about, you know what you're going to get, huge endeavour, a certain amount of skill, exhausted before the hour and a half's up, you know what you're going to get with Miggy. Clockwork, bunny, run up and down all day long, smile the smile of misfortune after a mischance, etc., etc. You know what you're going to get with both. They've both got a place in the current lineup, but they're not the stars of a side that's going to be top six or top seven.
Yeah, he's scoring this weekend, though. Almiron, you heard it here first, right?
Oh, we've heard it all season and all last season.
I've got the faith.
He scored once in the last season and a half, but if you keep saying it, you've got to be right at some stage, mate.
That's my approach.
Because he's got to score it sometime.
And then Isaac.
I tell you who's going to score this week. Isaac. Who's going to score this week.
Well, fingers crossed. I mean, if it's Nick Pope scoring, I don't mind, long as someone scores.
If he scores, it could be an OG.
Well, that's true.
The easiest way a goalkeeper scores, so let's not do
that. I've jinxed it now. But yeah, no, unquestionable. Isaac, it starts because you just can't see it coming. They haven't bought Chris Wood not to start Isaac, and Chris Wood can come off the bench and hopefully do a bit of damage later on. No.
No.
Moving on. The role of the crowd, you know, the last two home games of St James's Park, they've played a really, really good, you know, important part, as they always do. But I think we're starting to see just how important it really is. And Newcastle, I know they've only won that one game against Forest, but they are starting to build a bit of a fortress, as St James's Park should be.
Oh, it should be, and without a question. And you're going to get bumps in the road. We got a draw with Manchester City, which was absolutely magnificent, and we got a draw with Crystal Palace, which was absolutely disappointing. You're going to get both of those things. But the standard of play is improved. We're a front-foot team, we're a high-pressing team, we're a team of good energy. But like I've always said, this football might be a game of entertainment. It might be a form of entertainment, the same as going to the cinema or going to the theatre. But at the end of the day, it's results driven. There's absolutely no question whatsoever about that. Ask Klopp. He'll tell you how results driven it is. Ask Leicester. He'll tell you how it is. Ask Chelsea. But therefore, Newcastle must win above all else this Saturday.
How important is it that they're going to this break with 3 points?
Oh, totally. Absolutely, totally. Because if you don't, it's one win in seven. It doesn't matter that you've only lost one if this was a draw, because you've had too many draws. You'll have had one win in seven. And it doesn't matter how we try to camouflage it or justify it, that is disappointing. And also, may I say, not good enough. We can get rid of that this weekend by beating Bournemouth, by having those three extra points to kick us up that table just a little bit from your comfort zone of 11th, which is acceptable to you, but not to me. And if we're going to have a break, you always live on your last result, don't you? You know, when you have a break, you either have a spring in your step because you've just done great against Man City, or you've beaten Bournemouth, or you're a bit down in the mouth because you've lost in the 98th minute at Liverpool, or you've drawn with Palace, who you thought you were going to beat. So you've got to get the right result for a break.
Will the injustice of that Crystal Palace game still be burning, though, inside the bodies of the players? Because, first off, you had Eddie Howe afterwards, and he wasn't really up a height, which in a way I like. He got a bit of criticism for it, but he wasn't really as angry as Jesse Marsh, for example, with Leeds. And then you have, obviously, the West Ham game, which was then postponed. Do you think that, like I say, that sense of injustice will still be burning amongst the Newcastle camp, or is too long past now? And No. And that's not Eddie Howe's, way.
But I hope that a sense of injustice is not burning inside every Newcastle player. I hope a sense of falling beneath their high standards is what is burning inside them. Because while we are correct that VAR prevented us from winning, because that was a perfectly legitimate goal, it was an own goal. We had plenty of chances before, and we had half an hour afterwards to do something about it. I don't want Newcastle players sitting there burning with the injustice of VAR, because that is an excuse. They should have still won regardless of VAR. Regardless of getting that legitimate goal taken off them, we should have still won. And what should be known at them is that we let ourselves down, and let the fans down, and let the manager down, because we ought to have won that game. Not that VAR took it away from us, but that we passed up a great opportunity to get 3 points, because that has got lost behind this VAR thing. Because VAR's a national thing at the moment, and because we had the injustice of it, to follow other injustices, like the 8 minutes at Liverpool and the Sean Longstaff penalty that never was at Wolves, were suddenly hiding behind VAR. We weren't good enough against Crystal Palace, and the players should realise that and put that right, not burn with injustice of VAR this weekend.
And that's what the refreshing thing is, that Eddie Howe, from what he said, he's not going to use it as an excuse. Other managers would have ran with that.
Yes, they would. But he knew in his heart, and he's honest to himself as well as with other people, he was naturally upset at VAR because he wanted the 3 points. But he knew we'd brought a note upon ourselves. VAR didn't bring it. We brought it upon ourselves because we ought to have won, regardless of that being wiped out. Mm. And had we won 2-0,
we wouldn't be talking,
about that VAR goal.
Before I get you to give us your prediction as usual, just a reminder to you guys listening to please remember to like and follow the podcast through your podcast provider. Leave us a rating and review as well. That helps us get the show out to a wider audience. It's totally free to subscribe. Just means with every new episode we upload, you will get a notification to see it's ready to download or listen to. And please remember to pass the pod amongst your Newcastle United supporting friends and family. That was a bit of a weird way to say family there. I couldn't get the words out. Prediction time then, John.
Yeah.
I know for the last preview, Sam got you to give a score prediction. He didn't read his homework notes. So no. We're going to go back just correct to result prediction.
This is an easy one. Newcastle will win. And I'm the great advocate that we shouldn't give scores because that's just a lottery. It's like picking a number out of a hat because you don't know. But I would think with some daylight, let's put it that way, they'll win with some daylight. Because I think this side can concede goals, this Bournemouth side, And I think it's about time we scored goals. I think we're centre forward will be looking to score goals. So I'll do a double prediction. One is that Newcastle will win. The other one is Isaac will score.
You know, I do think Newcastle United will win. But I don't know if it's the old trepidation of being a Newcastle United fan. I'm not as confident as you are, because I think it's set up in such a way where Newcastle are better than Bournemouth. Bournemouth conceded a bag full of goals. We have a £60 million striker who should score, you would think. You potentially have the return of Saint-Maximin and Bruno. You have a full house. You have the atmosphere. Everything's set up, I think, in Newcastle's favour. And the old Newcastle, to me, still haunts me slightly. So I do think they'll win, but there's part of me thinks...
You sound, which is very understandable, like a jury that lived a decade and a half under Mike Ashley and still can't shake off the trepidation if the fact there's a bogeyman around the corner waiting for us. And I can understand that. But let's turn it on its head. And I think you used this phrase earlier in this exact podcast. If we don't beat Bournemouth at home, who do we beat?
That's very true. That is very true. And that is why, look at that, within a moment I've changed. We're going to win, John. Newcastle United will beat Bournemouth.
There's no question about that. We will beat Bournemouth. It's a matter of how many. If we don't beat Bournemouth, then next week is not alarm bells, but is an in-depth investigation into where Newcastle are going results-wise in the immediate future.
Well, fingers crossed, we don't need to have that in-depth discussion about where they're going, or maybe we do, but we'll just do it positively because Newcastle will have picked up 3 points this Saturday. We'll bring you live coverage of that game through our live blog over on chroniclelive.co.uk, bring you all the build-up and all the reaction as well, including a post-match podcast. Thank you very much for listening and enjoy the rest of your week.